Hello and welcome to the UK Personal Finance Show with Phil Anderson, the podcast designed to give you all the financial advice you'll ever need. This is episode 112, where in a moment, we're taking a look at investing in whiskey with guest expert Alison Moncrief of Whiskey Partners. That's on the way, like I say, in just a sec. But please bear in mind, if you have a general financial query, you're in the right place because we have an enormous resource of free advice right here. And you can access it all simply through delving into our back catalogue of shows, because in our programmes today, we featured loads of stuff. Pensions, investing, wills and powers of attorney, and heaps more. You name it, we've done it pretty much. And last week, we were chatting about unusual financial phrases. I bet you're simply bursting to find a conversation where you can shoehorn in your newfound knowledge of the dead cat bounce. Remember, we can drill down and focus on pretty much anything forensically. Find the UK Personal Finance Show with Phil Anderson on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts, and you'll get us there. As I say, an enormous resource, all available for free. Find our previous shows after listening to this one and have a binge on what you need. While you're there, if you could rate and review us, for instance, you could tell us what we need to address to help you out and follow the show. And then that way, you'll get that episode when we record it next time. I'm John Mellis, and with me, as always, the star of our show, Phil Anderson. Hi, Phil.
Hi, John. How are you today?
Good, thank you. Now, when Phil said to me, John, for the next show, I think we should do it on whiskey, I thought, brilliant! After all those entries into the episode suggestion box, he's finally taking up my idea for recording it in the pub on a Friday afternoon last thing. But no, he means the concept of investing in whiskey, which is not something I'd really heard of before. And that's why Phil's brought in an expert in the form of Alistair Moncrief. Welcome, Alistair. Tell us about Whiskey Partners, why it was formed, what it does, and your work history in this world.
Hi there, guys. Nice to meet you both. So what Whiskey Partner does in a nutshell is bridge the gap between distilleries and individuals who wish to invest or profit from casks of whiskey. And we do this by going to distilleries and buying stock of them that is not ready to go into a bottle just yet. And we then allow investors to purchase that stock at a discount, and basically profit from the maturation process of whiskey. Whiskey is a very interesting investment, as it relies on, or basically is from, the first rule of economics, supply and demand. And the only thing that makes whiskey more valuable is time. And we bridge that gap by partnering with investors and distilleries.
Okay, now this is a frankly terrible admission for a Scotsman, but I know almost zero about whiskey, other than I'm limited to drinking one as a post-meal contribution rather than having it as a more prominent house guest, purely to dial down my inner Jacobite. But what is it, firstly, that makes whiskey so prominent and favoured as a global export? And how do you apportion and sort of accumulate value in owning it? You touched on it there. Essentially, how does it make money for you over the longer term?
Well, first things first is obviously there's different types of whiskey. We see Scotch as the Rolls Royce of whiskey, and we focus all our attention pretty much on Scotch whiskey. And we do this for the main reason, like I just said, in terms of supply and demand. There is only 130 or so distilleries in Scotland, and only 50% or more of them are owned by four different companies. So in the free market of actual whiskey, there isn't a huge amount. And I think in terms of how you profit from whiskey is all down to, firstly, the purchase and the maturation process. So whiskey matures over time, and it gets better the longer that you leave it in its cask. And that's where the profit is derived from, in a sense, that distilleries producing something on a daily basis that they need to sit in a warehouse to mature. And obviously that takes cash, and that takes a lot of cash flow up for distilleries. And we simply bridge that gap by purchasing that stock off them today. And then when it matures in 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the line, they might want to choose to buy that stock back from us, or independent bottlers or other people, other investors might want to purchase that stock as well. So that's where the profit comes from, the maturation process.
How long have you been involved in this, Alistair? Is that a few years that you've been involved in?
Yeah, so we've been involved in the business for 4 years. I would like to say we're one of the market leaders in the space. And like all types of investing, it's all about the strategy that you take. And with whiskey, you've got numerous strategies. You can invest in bottles, you can invest in fine and rare casks of whiskey, or you can invest in new make casks of whiskey, which is in essence, brand spanking new whiskey that comes off the stills into a cask of whiskey. And whiskey has a rule. It needs to mature in a cask for 3 years and a day. After 3 years and a day, it's legally called whiskey. Before that, it is simply called new make spirit. So there's various different ways in investing. And over the last 4 years, we've invested in all of those three, and our clients investing all of those three. You don't need to just pick one strategy. You can pick all three strategies if you choose.
How do you know what whiskey to invest in? Is there certain ones that there's more demand for rather than supply? Is that the sort of things that you look out for? I know with us here, my business is a financial advice firm, so people will come to us if they're looking to invest in different things. But whiskey, I must admit, is something I know not an awful lot about. But what is it that you look for when you're looking at different whiskies to invest in, Alistair?
So if you look at it in terms of from a financial advice world, that when you're picking funds or stocks for your clients, obviously you do research, you look at those funds and you look at the performance, the past performance of those funds, you look at the history, the managers of those funds, and if it's stock, same principles apply. Whiskey is very similar to that. What we look for in terms of distilleries that we wish to partner with is what's their objective? What do they want to be? Do they want to be a premium brand, or do they want to be a mid-level brand? What's their marketing bandwidth? You know, how much money have they got to spend on marketing? And what's their exit strategy of the brand as well? Once we've looked at that, and bear in mind, there's a lot of old established distilleries, and it's not really a market that's being heavily disrupted by new incoming, shall we say, entrepreneurs. And the simple reason for that is barrier to entry. You know, whiskey is a very expensive process to create. So you need deep pockets. So we will look at the market. We will look at the exports of that particular brand before we partner with them. And we will most importantly look at where they want to get to. Now, everyone, like I imagine it's very similar in the financial advice world, everyone wants to go for the premium, because that's what they've seen in the news. And everyone wants to buy Apple stock because they've heard someone that's bought Apple stock 20 years ago and made 500% return. And you'll probably say, well, if you want Steady Eddie, go buy that, not a problem. But if you want to make what people made in Apple, you need to find the emerging stocks. It's exactly the same in whiskey.
Yeah.
You can choose to buy into the series premium that's already established and you can make a very good return, or you can go for the emerging stocks, just like you would do in terms of emerging markets, and you go for an emerging distillery that has a massive potential. And we like to focus on distilleries that have massive potential.
Yeah. I mean, are you saying that, like, I know you tend to look more at casks instead of actual, like, bottles of whiskey, but I was speaking to someone recently and they were suggesting that with the casks, am I right saying that they keep maturing, whereas once it's in a bottle, that's it, kind of aged at that point. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. So, look, investing in bottles is a great way to get involved in whiskey. I recommend it to all our clients that, you know, invest in bottles. They do go up in value. The only risk is temptation. If you've got a bottle on the shelf, like I have had many of times, you can end up opening it up and having a drink, and then your investment's worthless. But yeah, casks of whiskey's not like wine. So wine obviously matures and gets better in your cellar, in the bottle, and it creates that maturation process. Whiskey's all done within the cask. And as long as it's in that cask, the flavor profile is changing and it is, in essence, in theory, should we say, getting better with age. So once it's put into a bottle, that's it. The aging process is complete. So that's why you see 18-year-old whiskey, not a 1988 whiskey. That's why you'll see a 12-year-old whiskey, because that's the amount of time it's matured in its actual cask. Yeah. So your maturation process only happens in the cask. But that's not to say if you bought a bottle, it wouldn't increase in value, because the rarer the bottle becomes, the more the value it becomes.
Okay, so once a whiskey is bottled, that's it. It'll always be whatever age it was when it was bottled.
Correct.
It can maybe grow in value possibly, but if it's in the cask, it's still maturing. How long before it starts then to potentially offer a return for you if it's in the cask?
So again, this depends on your strategy. So if you go for what I described earlier as new make spirit, which is brand spanking new whiskey, if you like, you know, the realistic minimum hold of that is no less than 5 years. If you're wanting to go into rare and old casks, so so this could be a 30-year-old, a 20-year-old, a 15-year-old cask of whiskey, then you have an opportunity to exit that sooner because you might buy it and then another collector might want to purchase it from you, or another independent bottler might want to buy that from you. So your exit opportunities do expand, shall we say, but your return could also be reduced because it is a shorter period of time. So what I would say with whiskey is this isn't a short-term hold. It's not a get rich quick. It's not a crypto investment. It's not a spread betting investment. It's a very simply long-term hold, or medium to long-term, should we say. You want to be holding for a minimum of 5 years, and the longer you hold it, the greater in value it will become.
And realistically, Alistair, I think this is a point worth making, because, you know, I could be investing and starting to clear up my garage for these casks.
Yeah.
If I'm looking into investing in whiskey as an option, I don't personally have to have somewhere reliable to store the casks, but I'm assuming they do require a specialist environment for storage.
Yeah, they do. And they all need to be stored in bonded warehouses. And that's the first, most important part of the jigsaw, shall we say. So casks of whiskey have no duty or VAT paid on them until it is actually put into bottle and then obviously distributed through the sales channels. That's when the VAT and the duty is due, so as soon as it leaves that bonded warehouses. So all these bonded warehouses are governed by HMRC. Now, I don't know if you've ever owed HMRC any money, but they're very, very good from a collection perspective. So HMRC keep a very watchful eye on these bonded warehouses. And that's where you've got a level of security in the fact that it's not stored in your garage. You're not at risk in, you know, driving your car into the cask or anything like that. It is stored in an environment that it's made to be stored in. And that is, I'd say, the biggest difference between bottles and casks, in the fact that bottles can be delivered to your home. Yes, you can still store them under bond, but they can be delivered to your home and they can be put on your mantelpiece and you can store them in that environment. Whiskey casks are not like that. They have to store, they have to mature in Scotland, and they have to be bottled in Scotland.
See, but when it comes to selling them, Alistair, is there any, like, what's kind of involved there? I know, like, if I was buying something, you might think, right, I want to open up and taste it, but that wouldn't be something that would be possible with this, would it?
So remember, when you buy a cask of whiskey, it is a sale and purchase agreement. You own the cask, you can do what you want with it. So if you do want to take delivery and pay the duty and pay the VAT and get it delivered to your house, you're more than in your rights to do so. If you want to send it to a bottler to put it into a bottle and get the bottle delivered to your house, more than free to do so. But in terms of your exit options, and I think that's the point that you're making, in terms of how does casks of whiskey exit? Well, we're a whiskey merchant. So what we do is we buy and sell stocks of whiskey. We don't broker. So we don't sell on someone's behalf. We'll only buy the stock, and we only own the stock that we sell. There's loads of brokers out there that you could pick up the phone to and say, I've got a cask of whiskey, would you be interested in selling it for me? And they'd do that. You could ring us and say, I've got a cask of whiskey, I want to sell it, and we'd buy it from you, whether you bought it from us or not. What we're also in the middle of creating is the first whiskey platform exchange, if you like, which allows to match investors with sellers, or buyers with sellers, should we say. And hopefully this will be launching at the end of quarter one next year, and it allow you to go online and basically press a button to say you want to sell your cask of whiskey, and it will send a notification to all of the users on the platform, and they'll have the option to bid. But the real value for your cask of whiskey comes from exiting it to a bottler. Now, if you think about whiskey, and as I mentioned before, it only ages in the cask. If you're an independent bottler and you had a bottle brand, and you wanted a 12-year-old whiskey, you'd have to buy that today, leave it for 12 years, and then stick it into a bottle. From a cash constraint, that's huge. So what you end up doing as a bottler is you buy already aged stock that you're ready to bottle. And that's where we come in. So we get phone calls from independent bottlers saying, how much 12-year-old stock have you got available? Because I want to launch a bottle. And we'll say, we've got this available. Do you want to buy it at this price? And then we'll go buy it. And then we'll exit the investors out that way.
See, for a couple of questions I was thinking of as well is, I know this might be a hard one to answer, but what kind of returns would somebody be looking to try and get? And do you have a minimum investment amount as well if someone's dealing with yourselves?
Yeah, so we like to deal with all types of clients. Our minimum cask purchase is about £2,000. And what we incorporate with all our sales is storage and insurance. So we will give 10 years storage and 10 years insurance. So the reason for that is because we want our clients to hold it for 10 years, you know, realistically to generate that decent return. I think if you went into this with an 8 to 9 to 10% return per annum and you were happy with that, I think you're in the right ballpark. If you're going into this wanting to make 30-40% a year, go do something else.
Yeah.
Because realistically, you're looking at 8 to 12%, I'd say, from a genuine return. Now, I'm not saying that there isn't companies out there offering higher rates of returns, but we like to be on the conservative side.
I think that's one of the things that I know if I was doing it personally, we've done numerous shows in the past about different scams. And one of the things I often say to people, it's like when you've got folk quoting guaranteed returns or likewise, they might try and hurry you into a decision to do things. Scams and scammers are something that comes up quite a lot. And I'd imagine like in the whiskey world, that would be quite a big thing there as well, is it?
Yeah. And I think you've got to, with anything in terms of investment, it always creates scammers, you know, it always creates cowboys coming into an industry where they see vast amounts of money being invested in a certain sector. We've seen it with crypto, we've seen it with you name it, stock shares, funds, all of it has managed to be tarnished. And I think it just goes back to the old way of doing business. You know, you need to do your research. The biggest risk in the whiskey space is there's no index. So you can go on Google today and you can find a whiskey bottle and you can find probably 10 or so different prices of that particular bottle. And they'll all vary, but they won't be massively out. In the cask space, no one's done that. There isn't that pricing index. So the biggest risk anyone has got, apart from leakage, because leakage is a risk in the space, you are at the end of the day sticking liquid in a bit of wood in a warehouse. So it does have that. It does have that risk associated to it. But the biggest risk I see is pricing. If you buy wrong at the front end, regardless of the rate of return that you're chasing, if you bought it wrong and your price inflated by 20, 30, 40%, you've got a lot of chasing up to do. So I think that's the bit where people need to be very, very careful. And, you know, quick bits of checking can soon do that. Make sure they've got the relevant licenses to trade. So HMRC govern the industry of cash trading in the fact of your trading duty suspended goods. So HMRC, we require a license from HMRC in order to trade. Make sure the company's established. Make sure they have a decent set of accounts. Make sure they're not overdue. Make sure they've got a physical presence. Make sure they've got offices. You know, just do your research on the companies that you're dealing with, just like you would in any sector.
Yeah. I think that's a great answer. If I was looking at doing something up, the first place I would go would be like a company's house. Is it a kosher company? Can you see details on there? So I think what you just said there is excellent, Alistair.
Is this something where you can enter into as an individual, or do you require to deal through companies such as Whiskey Party in order to sort of navigate the regulatory authorities, if you like, and all the ins and outs?
No, you can pick up the phone to distilleries today and you can have a chat with them to see if they've got any cash that they're willing to sell to you. Not many distilleries offer that option. However, some distilleries do. And some distilleries are now launching cask programs because they know there's an appetite for this. They can deal direct with consumers and they'll offer a cask program to a client. But that may come with certain restrictions. So it might be a case of it's more for a passion play. So it might be that they're going to give you an invite to bottle the cask at the distillery. You can't sell that cask to the public and you'll have various restrictions on that cask and what you can and can't do with it. Because it's more from a, you know, a whiskey fan to buy into a distillery. We're here to navigate the way, shall we say.
One thing that we just very briefly touched on earlier was about sort of tax. Now, I know usually if somebody has an asset that they sell for a gain, you've usually got capital gains tax to pay. But I think, am I right in saying that something you don't have with casks of whisky? Is that correct?
Yeah, so whisky casks, but back to what it is, it's water inside wood and it evaporates. And because it evaporates, which is called an angel share, and it evaporates in terms of the content at about 2% per annum. That's why you don't get 150-year-old whiskies, by the way, because, you know, it comes to a point where there's not enough alcohol content in there to become legal, which is 40% ABV. So the alcohol content needs to be 40%. But because it's a wasted asset and because it's got this angel share, it's CGT exempt. So there's zero capital gains to pay on your profit that you make from whiskey casks.
Fantastic. Let's just say there's someone listening to this, Alistair, like my mate who loves a good dram. In fact, he's got his own whiskey tasting club. He's a real aficionado. He'd love nothing more than to invest, but he doesn't have the funds to do it. Could he go back to his club and say, hey, guys, I've got an idea. Why don't we collectively invest in a cask? Maybe somewhere down the line, bottle it or sell it on. Is joint investment an option or is it too complex?
So there's a lot of companies out there that are trying to go into this space from a collectible, fractional perspective, shall we say. And I think that's great. I just think everyone needs to have the same objective because it's not something that you can break down. The cask is the cask at the end of the day. If one person wants out, you just need to make sure that between everyone that they are all in agreement for all this. The best way to invest in a cask of whiskey is to buy it yourself because you've got complete control of it, to be blunt. And if you want to go invest in whiskey and you've got a couple of £100 to spend, buy a bottle. Do your research, find a limited edition run and buy a bottle because you can quite quickly trade bottles.
If someone's listening to the show today, Alistair, and they wanted to get in touch with yourself or Whiskey Partners, do you have contact details and anything else that you would want to kind of add at all?
Yeah, I think Whiskey Partners are trying to bring technology into this space. And I'd like to say we're a bit of a disruptor in the space. So what whiskeypartners.com offer you is a full online portal, soon to be an app, which launches in the next month or so. And you can go on there, you can register your details, you can log into an online portal, and you can see all the casks that we have available at the price that we have them available for you to do your own research. And if you want to speak to one of our experts, feel free to fill in a form and tell them to give you a call and someone will give you a call as well.
That's brilliant. Do you see the demand for whiskey still remaining quite good in the future?
I think the demand for whiskey has only just started to really escalate. And we're going to see some very interesting things with different trade deals. So, for example, India is a massive consumer of whiskey, but a very limited amount of it is Scotch, and that's due to a trade tariff. So 150% is what they charge on top of a bottle that we'd sell on the shelves. If that trade deal goes the right way, which is looking like it will do, that opens a whole new market of very, very established whiskey drinkers. Yeah. So yeah, if that opens up and various different other areas of the world opens up, which it is doing, you're only going to see the exports increase.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, let's do this bit now. Phil's quote of the week, fans, buckle in. This is the part of the show where Phil delights us with a quote on the relevant subject topic for the show because you've always loved and benefited from an inspirational quote here and there throughout your life, Phil. So this week, Phil, what have you got investing in whiskey?
I've got a Mark Twain quote this week. Too much of anything is bad, but too much of good whiskey is barely enough.
I like that.
Now, Phil is really keen in trying to help with your queries. So if ever you want to email a question to us, please do. And as always, we can ask him anonymously if you prefer. Let's get on to this week's contact details in just a moment. I'll give it to you after these. Hi, Phil. I've heard you speaking about longer term mortgages in the show the last couple of weeks, which people use if they can to make their monthly payments cheaper. How would that work out in terms of cost for insurance of the property? That wouldn't lower as well, would it?
But you find some insurances could potentially go up. So like life insurance and critical illness cover, it could be a little bit more expensive because you're then taking out the cover up to a higher age. So because you're more likely to make a claim, that could actually increase slightly by extending your mortgage term. Accident sickness cover could be a wee bit cheaper because you're actually lowering your monthly payments. So you maybe don't have so much to cover there. And home insurance, it would be unaffected by whatever mortgage term you go for.
Okay. Next up, here's one about pensions. This time it's from Gary in Cardiff, who says, hi, Phil. I heard recently in the news when finances were volatile that pensions may suffer as a result because of the markets. Has that threat been dealt with now, or could I still lose money?
See, that's it. Markets go up and down all the time, and there's still a lot of volatility around at the moment, still a lot of political uncertainty, economic uncertainty. So I think certainly in the short term, there's still going to be more volatility. If you're paying into, say, a pension on a monthly basis, one of the good things there is that you're buying in at different points. So that kind of takes some of the kind of volatility out of it. So you're buying in, if markets drop, it's good because you're buying in at a cheaper point. But that was something we kind of covered on last week's show when we covered what's called pound cost averaging. So that was something we'd mentioned there as well.
Okay, I would just say, before you get in touch with the question, you might want to take a look at our back catalogue, because we've covered a lot of topics now, and we may well have touched on what you're interested in. I'm Jim Ellis. Thank you for joining us for episode 112 of the UK Personal Finance Show with Phil Anderson. And thank you once again, Alistair, for being our guest. If you feel you need a helping hand with anything that we've been discussing or anything else of a monetary matter, find Phil for Finance. Search Phil Anderson Financial Services online or join the Facebook group for the show. Search Personal Finance Community. That's Personal Finance Community on Facebook. Phil's on Twitter and LinkedIn as well. Or why not email Phil a question he can answer on a future show? His address is phil@philandersonfinancial.co.uk. That's phil@philandersonfinancial.co.uk. Send him your question and Phil could be answering it in an upcoming podcast. And please be assured, we won't use your real name if that is what you'd prefer. Remember, if you found this useful, please rate and recommend us, and please follow us on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. Then you'll get us every week with the info you want when you need it. You'll get all the links you need on Phil's social media. Good luck with your money. Phil's doing his best to help make that cash go further. We'll see you next time. And thanks for listening.
Thanks very much, John. And thanks again for coming on, Alistair. I've really enjoyed the show today.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.